Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, it's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies and beyond. Every weekday around 10 a.m. Brought to you by the attorneys of Thomas White & Gill. Find them online at memphisfamilylaw.com.
Chris, what's this that we're listening to?
That's In the Still of the Night by the Five Satins, classic hit from the 50s, which Martin Scorsese uses in the opening shot of his new film, The Irishman, which played in Memphis at Malco Paradiso last night, now on Netflix for anyone who wants to watch it.
I was going to literally open by asking you about The Irishman, which you wrote about over at the Daily Memphian. All I know is it's long. And it's by Martin Scorsese, and I've heard people have mixed feelings about it. What is your sense? You watched it. Were you there last night, or did you watch it in some other fashion?
I watched a screener of it last week. I did not go last night. I would like to have seen it on the big screen, but I just couldn't. I was not at the Grizzlies game last night. Don Wade did the game, but I couldn't budget 3.5 hours for that movie twice in the span of a week, and so I did not do it. Although I do want to watch it again sometime.
All right. So what'd you think?
It's still settling with me. I really need to see it again. I used to when I was a film critic, as more of a profession, I would try to watch every movie I considered for my year end top 10 twice, and that is just not possible anymore. And so I think it's really good and really interesting. I do not think it's a masterpiece necessarily, as some people have proclaimed. I don't think it's very top tier Scorsese. If I made my year end list right now, it probably would not be in my top five.
I gather it's not a particular crowd pleaser. Is that right?
That's to me what's interesting about it is that I think, you know, some of the disappointment people have had has been, oh, it's just too long. And like I'm fine with that actually. It is, I mean, it's really long. And some of it has been about some of the technology they use to make people to change the way people look in terms of their age, but I think some of it has been that people sort of want it to be Goodfellas and Casino, and it's very intentionally not that. It's a movie that sort of intentionally drains some of the like energy and pizzazz out of those movies because it's sort of making a point about sort of, you know, glamorizing is not the right word because I don't think Goodfellas does that. But it's sort of taking sort of that energy out of sort of those gangster movies in a way that's sort of a commentary on them. It's very much a movie very consciously about getting old. It's about aging. It's about regret. The funny thing to me is that song I played in The Still of the Night, in that opening scene, there's this scene in Goodfellas where he plays, I think it's Fiddy Kiss Me by the Crystals, old doo-wop song, and it's while it's this tracking shot through the Copacabana, and it's like, you know, you're a night on out on the town and then the club, and the scene in the beginning of The Irishman imitates that, but what you're tracking through is a nursing home. And it's a very deliberate sort of movie about aging and about regret. And so I think that tone is sort of, some people want it to be more like an old Scorsese movie, and he's very intentionally not doing that.
And your favorite, best Scorsese movies, Goodfellas, Taxi Driver, Raging Bull, what do you got?
I would need to, it's been a long time since I've seen Raging Bull, and I've seen it multiple times, but it's been a long time. I feel like Raging Bull is maybe not quite its reputation. I do think Goodfellas and Taxi Driver are full-on masterpieces, and those, I think, are the two best Scorsese movies.
Not so much a masterpiece last night, the Memphis Grizzlies.
Nope.
Listen, I don't know if there could possibly be a less attractive game on the Memphis. It's behind us now, so I can say this.
The
Indiana Pacers, on a Monday night, down four rotation players, including John Morant, is about as unappealing a Memphis game as it gets, and yet Jaren had a nice game. Your man, D'Anthony Melton, who you believe in, had a decent game. They actually were kind of scrappy. What'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's also it's the Monday after Thanksgiving. Right. And so they'd had the two home games around Thanksgiving, and, like, it's sort of like you're getting back into the swing of things. And so I think just on the calendar, it's not a great game either. I think what was, you know, they're down three of their top five scorers and probably their two best playmakers, at least two of their three best playmakers. And so, I mean, they got a good win in Minnesota the day before, but, like, it's going to be tough to win, especially against a good team when you're down that many players on what is already a bad team. But I think the most interesting things about the game were the two players you just mentioned, which is Jaren Jackson and D'Anthony Melton. And what I'm sort of interested in about Jackson, I went back and watched all of his shots. He had 19 field goal attempts in that game, and I sort of tracked them, like what kind of shots they were. Mm-hmm. And my sense is that watching him this season, most of his shots, and I'll go back and double check this to make sure I'm right, but my sense is that most of his shot attempts have either been three-pointers, which has been a great growth, you know, part of his game this season. And it's been post-ups, where they've really struggled to get him the ball in good spots the way they did last season. And last night, I mean, he took the 8 threes, but of those 19 shot attempts, only 2 were post-ups by my count. 7 of them were on the move, him with the ball attacking the rim, either on drives out of isolation or on pick and roll. And you haven't seen a lot of that this season, and that's something that I think has a lot of growth potential with him, with his length and his ability to handle the ball. And I think we haven't seen that in part because, you know, John Morant's so ball dominant, but a lot of it's Jonas Valanciunas. There's just not space in the middle of the floor. And I think you saw him take advantage of that space in the middle of the floor and the extra touches that came from those other scorers not being there. And so I think that really helped him, like, have a really good offensive night. Now, you know, that's not necessarily best for the Grizzlies to not have Jonas Valanciunas or John Morant. I mean, so you got to find the right balance. But I do think Jaren Jackson benefited from that space in the middle of the floor and the ability to, like, get more touches and get more and be able to sort of attack space and attack the rim in a way that he hasn't really been able to much this season.
And there was also, by the way, there was an interesting quote from Taylor Jenkins and Don Wade's piece about Jackson and fouls. He had 5 fouls, including one ridiculous one against our friend Justin Holiday. He said,
He had another one where he grabbed the shorts or grabbed the jersey, though, right? It's always a mix, yeah. Right.
I've gone back and been honest with him, looking at the tape and saying, you could have been a little more urgent, more aware, technique could be better. Tonight, defensively, I challenged him early. I didn't think he was aggressive as he needed to be. He really picked it up, 2 block shots. He got to the foul line 9 times, blah, blah, blah. What do you make of that? You could have been a little more urgent, more aware, technique could have been better. Is that that's what Jenkins seems to be saying, is at the root of the foul thing. Urgent, awareness, technique could be better.
I mean, those are 3 different things. Jenkins is watching film with him. I'm sure he's right. I think, you know, technique and awareness, I think clearly are at issue. You know, urgency relative to fouls is a little harder to sort of comprehend, and I'm not sure exactly what he means about that. I'm not saying that's wrong, but I'm not sure exactly what he means. But technique and awareness, I think clearly are at issue. Yeah.
All right, what was interesting to you about D'Anthony Melton?
You know, I just think he's good, and I think, you know, he's 6-10 last night. I think he was 2-10 the day before, and so I think the scoring with him is going to come and go. What's not going to come and go is he is long, and he's sort of got twitchy athleticism, and he's going to get his hands on the ball. Like, it's going to – in that game last night, it was 9 rebounds. In the game before, it was 2 steals. You look at him last season, he was near the top of the league, if not the very top, in terms of his rate of deflections, just deflecting the ball, the old Hubie Brown stat. He is going to make plays with his athleticism in some way, defensively on the boards, whatever. And I just think you can depend on that. I think, you know, he's going to have some nights where he has lots of turnovers. He only had 2 last night. He'll may have some nights where, like, he can't hit a shot. You know, he's still a work in progress. I think he's 21. You know, he hasn't really played that much. But I think he's got that length and athleticism that's going to impact the game, you know, most of the time when he's out there. I just think you can depend on it. And so, you know, I think he needs to be playing even when everyone comes back. I'll be interested to see, like, if that is the case, like, what role that is. Like, does he push Tyus Jones for backup point guard? Does he push Grayson Allen for backup two guard? To me, he's a combo, and I think, you know, if he pans out, he's a guy who could be sort of a third guard, basically, and play either role.
Okay, and then the other thing, last thing before I let you go, Anthony Sain is on an anti-James Wiseman campaign on Twitter.
Right.
I think it's way too early to have any conviction about the draft. I haven't seen enough of these players one way or another, and including James Wiseman, honestly, and because of the way the circumstances have played out. And I also have no idea where the Grizzlies will be drafting or if they'll be drafting. Having said that, do you have a conviction about position versus player? And it to me, as I take this initial look at the draft, except for Anthony Edwards, who seems like, and again, it's in the abstract, I haven't seen him much.
Right.
He seems like the guy who would be the fit. The odds that you would be picking in the exact spot where you could get Anthony Edwards seem pretty remote. And after that, you've got a bunch of sort of ball dominant point guards. LaMelo Ball's a non-shooter. Like, well, he's a non-accurate shooter. He's a non-maker, as Tony Barone would say. So you got Cole Anthony needs the ball in his hands. LaMelo Ball needs the ball in his hands as sort of the other two highly rated guys. How are you thinking about it when it comes to the Grizzlies' position, et cetera?
Well, I can tie this back to our intro topic, actually, in that, you know, I guess we did the podcast last week, and there's this thing about how, well, after football season, people will blah, blah, blah. People will pay attention to so-and-so after football season. My version of after football season is after movie season. And so, like, late November, early December, I'm binge-watching movies from the year. I don't really start watching a lot of college ball and start really putting in work towards thinking about the draft until January, and so I'll get into all that then. And so I've seen James Wiseman play twice.
Right.
I've seen Anthony Edwards only on YouTube highlights. I don't think I've ever seen Cole Anthony play, but even in a YouTube highlight, And so I can't really talk to specific players that much yet. That will come with me next month. But in terms of your question about just sort of philosophy, I mean, I've always contended that you got to take the best player available. While generally true, it's something that's sort of easy for media people to say, but it's a little more complicated, I think, in reality. And so I think you balance those two things. You never pass on a player you think is going to be a star to take a player you don't think is going to be a star, like, ever, regardless of anything. But I think considering your team situation is something that is natural. And so I think with the Grizzlies, it's a case of you take best player available, unless the best player available is a ball-dominant point guard, in which case, if you think that player is clearly the best player available, you're looking for a trade that can maximize the value of that. Unless you think that player is better than Ja Morant, which I do not think will be the case, right? And so that's sort of my general approach. I mean, from what I've seen, I think Wiseman and Edwards both, if you consider them the best player available, would be easy to take. It might be a little more complicated if you think a Cole Anthony or a LaMelo Ball is the best player available. But I'll have a better sense of that when I actually watch them play.
The other thing that people say all the time that I think is a little too easy is, if these players are equal, then you take the position. Your job is to make have a conviction about what's equal. Like, I mean, very rarely are players equal. Now maybe there's a tier, and maybe you could, you know, but in the end, Luka and Trae Young are not equal, right? Trae Young's very good, but he's not Luka. What do you think went into that, by the way? Like, we can say that it was a colossal mistake by Atlanta, wasn't it?
Well, I think it's easy for people to say now, obviously, Luka was going to be a superstar. Everyone should have known that. And if you remember back at the time, there was a lot of doubt within the NBA about him.
Right. Is he explosive enough to be a star? Is he explosive enough to be a star was the question.
There was legitimate doubt, I think, for lots of NBA teams. Not whether he'd be good, but whether he would be great, right? And so I think it's easy in retrospect. You just think, oh, everyone should have known on Luca. I also think Atlanta, you get the sense that Atlanta, and maybe this is unfair, but that they had in their head, we're going to be Golden State.
Exactly.
So specifically that they just saw Steph Curry and Trae Young. And Trae Young is great, but they were just trying to replicate that specific model too closely.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what probably went into that, is they said, I guess I do object to that. Like, to me, that is at least reminiscent of the Grizzlies saying, we need a rim protector, and so we will fit that person into. And again, Trae Young is not the team to beat. He's a good player.
Right.
But that's putting the template ahead of the talent. Anyway, well, we'll certainly talk about this more as we go forward. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. That is Chris Harrington.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.